Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Okay, welcome to the Grazing Toolbox. With me today, I've got Kim Ricardo, Robin Salverson, and Taylor Grissing, and of course, I'm Parker Witt. Today, we got a big topic. We're talking about nitrates. It seems to be on everybody's mind right now. Nitrates are the talk of the time, and the time is driven by drought. So without further ado, what are nitrates? Why are they a concern? And why does it matter enough that we decide to record an entire podcast talking about nitrates?
Well, I'll just kick it off. I guess as a cow-calf field specialist, nitrates are a big concern for our animals. And if we are not testing for nitrates, we can have either A, abortion, or even potentially death. So obviously that's a big impact and something that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, big time. Honestly, one of the, so Kim and I, we've taken over the nitrate testing program. We're in the process of taking on the nitrate testing program for South Dakota State here. And I'll be honest, when it was first pitched to us, I had to do a little bit of looking into what nitrates actually are and how they cause these issues, because you always hear about potential death loss and oxygen transport issues, abortions with pregnant cattle, those sorts of things. But I did a bit of a deeper dive going into this, and I found that nitrates honestly aren't the concern. It's nitrites with an I that cause all the issues, which was news to me. But it's interesting that we can manipulate the rumen microbes and the gut microorganisms, for lack of a better description, to basically be able to better handle nitrates. And there's a million and one different ways to do that, but the bottom line is nitrates, when they're uptaken by the animal through the plants, get converted by the rumen microbes into nitrites with an I. And then from there, they go down the chain and they get converted into microbial proteins and then the waste product of ammonia. And the issue comes from when you can't convert nitrite into those metabolites, ammonia and microbial protein, faster than the nitrates can be converted into nitrites. As confusing as that is, basically it's a supply chain issue if you really boil it down. So we need to figure out ways that we can limit the amount of nitrates that are coming into that animal, or on the back end, make sure that the rumen is properly prepared to be able to handle nitrates, converted into these metabolites. So kind of a nerdy way to start it off, and we understand some of the issues that come with it, but what are some big ticket items that producers should start looking for when nitrates are on the mind, or how do we know that this is an issue that we should be concerned about?
Well, the certain forages that we like to graze, you know, specifically that might become high in nitrates, for example, in the spring could be oats. As we get further into the summer, sorghum sedan is another big one. But those are just a couple that usually come to mind, especially now in a drought when we're looking for additional resources to graze. Our pastures usually aren't an issue, right? You know, so we have cool season grass, warm season grass. There's definitely some weeds like kochia as well. They could be nitrate accumulators. Those aren't probably the things we're as worried about in the pasture setting. It's a lot of those annual forages that we're planting possibly for hay, or primarily for hay or grain. But as the drought continues and maybe we can't salvage them for that grain, we're looking at haying them. And so one thing to consider, grazing is going to be a little bit different than a dry hay sample. And we can get into that a little bit when you guys talk about how the test works. But you know, that high moisture content of these growing forages are always good to test. But as soon as you cut that plant, that nitrate is stuck in the plant. And so there's nowhere for it to go then either. And so that hay bale is going to have that nitrate concentration, versus if we, you know, caught some rain, you know, it's going to continue to utilize the nitrate and nitrogen to grow. Not to say it still might not be high. You always want to test it, but the test is a place and time on a growing forage. And so just because it's a little bit high today doesn't mean if you're going to go graze it in 2 weeks, you know, that level could change. And so that's something to consider as well.
I think Taylor brings up a good point too. A lot of people think once it goes in a bale and it's stored, that nitrates go down. And Taylor made a really strong point that it does not. I had a gentleman that was just 100% adamant that if I went and tested this hay a year later, that it would be lower in nitrates. And guess what I did? I went and tested it and it was not lower in nitrates. So again, once you remove that plant from its roots and it's no longer growing, that nitrate stays there. So as Taylor said, the opportunity for it to reduce in nitrates as that plant matures, is a possibility. So.
Yeah, it takes me back to my early days of college when we were going through initial plant science courses. Nitrogen is mobile in the plant, which it absolutely is. Store nitrates when that plant's growing. You cut that plant, they're sticking around for a long time. Honestly, the only way to get rid of them is ensiling it. But the way that I pitch this one out to people is not do I think my nitrates are high, but rather have conditions occurred that justify testing or justify the concern of high nitrates. And more to what Taylor was saying, we know some of the conditions that are going to cause nitrates to be high. Drought conditions are always going to cause nitrates to accumulate at a higher concentration within the plant, but it depends what kind of a plant you're growing. So the big ones that I always list off for people are things like the annuals, oats, barley, wheat, rye, and then of course some of our bigger warm seasons, your corns, sorghums, sorghum Sudan grasses, of course millets, especially pearl millet seems to cause more issues this time of year with droughts. And then I'm really glad that we talked about cochon and broadleaf leaves. Excuse me, broadleaf weeds, because they're often the one that people forget about because it's not something that you intend to have out there, but cattle certainly love to eat them, and we can certainly test those as well. So the theme of this is going to be that if at any point in the podcast our listening audience has questions about nitrates, please, please, please reach out. Please get us a test. We will test it for free. Send those tests in just to make sure that a cheap test is not something standing in the way of you and death loss with your cattle. What are, since we're talking about some of these conditions that justify high nitrates and justify testing for nitrates, let's talk a little bit about what we're experiencing right now. And what are some conditions that we may not be experiencing right now that would also cause folks to be interested in testing for nitrates or cause concern with it?
Taylor already mentioned a little bit, but of course, the big thing we're seeing right now is drought. But there's also other environmental conditions that can affect nitrate accumulation. So things like hail damage, frost, even cloudy weather and diseases. And then, on your integrated operations that do both livestock and crop production, you also have to consider fertility management, right? So fields and pastures that were fertilized with high nitrogen may also have an increased risk of nitrate accumulation. And so really, I think just given, kind of where we're at, especially with the high cattle market, I just saw last week some pairs go for $6,000. If you're questioning, what kind of year that crop has had, if you think there's a chance for that crop to have, some nitrate accumulation, it's really worth it to test.
Yeah, and a good starting point if you're taking on rented ground or if you're taking on ground that you're not familiar with the fertilizer history is to either get your hands on or take a soil test because that's a good starting point. It'll tell you roughly how heavily that pasture or that field was fertilized in years prior and if nitrates are something that you should be concerned going forward with.
Personally, I think if you have any questions whatsoever, a nitrate test is the cheapest insurance that you can take out. It's maybe about $20, and Kim just said that pairs were going for 6,000. So, gosh, that's the cheapest insurance policy you can do. Even if you're like, I've had no fertilizer laid down, but yes, we've been droughty, but no fertilizer come back to. I've seen, fields that are annual forages, oats, things like that come back with high nitrates, even though they've never been fertilized either. So I just, man, why not test? Cheapest insurance policy. So that's, gosh, I don't know. It's just such a high risk, to take.
I'm no economist, and even I can make those numbers make sense.
So when we get the results back from the lab, we can talk about, maybe how to interpret those and what to do with those forages, right? So doesn't mean we just scrap it. Like we said, they're captured in the dry hay bale. If you do end up ensiling it, we want to test that after it's gone through fermentation for 30, 45 days, something like that, to try to enact that. It's probably not going to totally get rid of it, but that, like Parker said, is an option as well. So when we get those readings back from the lab, they might come in a couple different forms, whether that's parts per million, nitrogen. So whenever we send it to the lab for you, like Parker said, we can do this for free this year. Currently, we have prepaid mailers. We can get it in the mail really fast, but it's probably still going to take about a week to probably get those results back. So once we get them back, let's talk about how you want to use those, Tim.
Yeah, that's a great segue into the question that's been plaguing me, it seems like the last few weeks, is what do I do when I have forages that test high with nitrates? Do I wait? Do I completely abandon that pasture? Do I hay it? Do I ensile it? Let's talk a little bit about some options and some strategies that people might be able to utilize to maintain use of some of these forages, because obviously in a drought year, we don't want to let anything go to waste if we can use it, but we also don't want death loss or any concerns, especially with pregnant cattle and nitrates. So
I guess one of the first things I will mention is if you are grazing this forage, to A, first have it tested, but B, if it is one thing about grazing, which is a bit more challenging than if you were feeding a harvested forage or hay bale, you have control of how much they intake. But when they're out grazing, you do not, right? You have no control of what they're going to graze. And so, one of the recommendations is making sure they're full before you turn them out onto a field like that. Make sure that, they haven't been overnight in a corral or something like that, and then you stick them out or send them out into these crops that potentially have some may have some higher nitrates throughout the field. So making sure that they're full. That's one management strategy I would say with the grazing side of things. But again, have it tested, but realize, I guess this is maybe a little bit off the topic, Parker, that you just asked us about. But, when people are testing their forages, make sure they take a representative sample of that field. I get samples in sometimes into my office that there's maybe five plants. And that tells me right there that that field was not, collected a crop, there wasn't a good representative sample collected. So I highly encourage not just one end of the field, not just a high area or a low area, but I take a good sample so that when it is tested, you feel more comfortable. And then you can say, yep, I can send these cows out here. And I feel comfortable, more comfortable about that.
I
Well,
love it. I love the tangents. Let's talk, since we're going down the rabbit hole of testing for forages or testing forages. How do we take a good representative sample from a field? How much of that plant should we be sampling? Are we just taking the top, the middle, the bottom? What's a good strategy that somebody could use if they wanted to bring in forage for us or a lab to test? How can they get a good representative sample?
I guess I'll start off. When we think about where nitrates actually accumulate in the plant, and it accumulates at the lower portion of the stalk of the plant or the stem of the plant. And so when you are sampling, you really should cut near the surface of the soil or, above the soil surface. So as much of the plant as you can. Okay. Because again, nitrates accumulate on that bottom portion of the plant. So when you think about what portion of the plant, take it all. I even say bring me the roots if you really want to. I can clip those off, but I don't need the roots, but clip down low. And then, like I said, test at a diagonal in that field, for instance, and go across that field and take those high, lows, area, all those different areas where obviously in some areas are rocky and we don't get as good a plant growth, So there's so much variation in that field. So go diagonal across that field and get in different areas. And the number of plant samples you take kind of varies, right? Depending on how big the field is. But that's when you're grazing. And then some people are like, well, I hay this. This is a, I'm going to hay it. Do I have to worry about it as much because nitrates are at the lower, part of that plant because you're going to cut it up, right? You're going to put your cutter up higher than that. And I'm, that's a great point. But there's still, if you're going to do sampling of standing forage, whether it's going to go into a hay bale or not, I still encourage them to take the whole plant. And then we can also test it after it's been in the hay bale, right? Again, that's a total of $40, so that's a pretty cheap, again, insurance policy. So any other comments, I'd welcome that, but.
Yeah, no, it's one of those weird areas where the art kind of meets the science here with the testing or the sampling, I guess, in this case. in that if we're doing like a biomass estimate on how much standing forage you have out there, usually you want to be methodical and take from selected locations throughout the field or random locations throughout the field and try to harvest as much forage as a cow could consume, usually down to about 1 to 2 inches above the ground. I'm of the mindset, and there might be folks that argue with me out here, but I'm of the mindset that if we're going to be selecting plants to look for concerns or issues in the field, I want to find those issues before they become a problem. So when I'm doing my representative field sampling, I'll zigzag an X across the field, but always be selecting for areas that I think might have more nitrates than other areas. So if there's a particularly green and lush area in the field, might get a little bit more water, might get a little bit more fertilizer. That's the area I want to make sure that I grab at least a few plants from. And I'll pull the entire root ball and everything, knock the dirt off, and bring it with me. And I'll test right at the very soil surface just because I know my cows aren't going to graze all the way down there. But if there is a problem, I want to know it's there before it becomes a problem. And then the same goes with areas that are less productive in the field. If you have a rocky hilltop, make sure you go there too. You just want a good representative sample of everything that you see out in the field, but particularly every area that could cause an issue. And then since we talked a little bit about taking it for hay, a great strategy, kind of circling it back into what you do if you have a hot forage test, whether you test before or after you cut hay, a good mitigation strategy is always going to be raising up that cutting head 6 to 12 inches just to try to leave as many nitrates as you possibly can in the bottom portion of that plant so that we're not worried about those going into the bale. Again, if you do hay it, we can test in the bale. We'll probably get more into that a little bit later. I know Kim's got some content that she's put out on sampling from bales. I think Taylor has as well. But really, like Robin was saying, it's all about limiting intake, avoiding turning out hungry cattle into a forage source where they're going to hammer it really hard, really fast, and overload those the biology within the, excuse me, within the rumen, and causing some of those supply chain issues that we started the podcast talking about, where they can't convert the nitrates into nitrites quick enough, excuse me. I'm going to get tongue-tied here. And then obviously you're going to have cascading issues down the line with oxygen transport. So it's all about dilution, right? Dilution is the solution to pollution. If your field is polluted with too many nitrates, you want to dilute it down. One of the strategies that we've used quite a bit and had good success with is offering a free choice energy supplement or a free choice fiber supplement or forage out there, like dried hay that we know is not high in nitrates. Can anybody speak a little bit on strategies that we can utilize some of these techniques to dilute out forages to try to mitigate some of these problems?
Do have one thing I want to mention more so on the grazing side. So Robin brings up a good point that those nitrates are accumulated in that bottom third of the stem. So, when we think about grazing nitrate forages or forages that might have some nitrate accumulation, that's another reason it's really important that we don't overgraze it and graze it down to the soil because that's where those nitrates are. And so, like Robin mentioned, with grazing, it's a little difficult to manage intake on those animals, but using some grazing practices such as strip grazing can help kind of control that a little better and reduce, I guess, access to some of those higher nitrate portions of the plant.
I
So,
appreciate
Kim,
that.
how
Go
come that
ahead.
works? Oh, sorry.
Because we're not grazing the forages down so low to the soil where those nitrates are accumulated.
I guess I have one other comment, and as Kim was talking there, that also we don't want to graze down that far because that's where potentially the nitrates are. And as you guys, Kim and Parker, I know you work also in the world of soil health too, is that plant is there for a purpose beyond feeding that cow or that animal. It's there to help feed that soil. And so I think that's really important too, is individuals are utilizing potentially these drought stricken areas that they're still leaving those leaving a plant mass around are available still for that soil. So
That's a great point, Robin. It all kind of ties back to soil health eventually, depending on how far down the rabbit hole we go. But especially in drought years, it's not the time to get, as much as I love intense grazing practices and intense rotations where you're utilizing more than half of that plant whenever available, these times are not when you want to get cute with your grazing strategy because nitrates aside, you need to be leaving at least 50%, if not more, of that plant around just to try to mitigate some of the issues that come with opening the door to invasives and other noxious weed species via drought. Because trust me, kochia absolutely thrives in drought conditions. And if you take away enough of the cover where it's not being shaded out, it's going to explode. And unfortunately, kochia comes with a lot of nitrates themselves, so you're going to just create further issues down the road.
Well, not only that, but it's also really important to make sure you leave some residual forage during times of drought so that if moisture comes, that plant has a greater opportunity to regrow.
Definitely. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit on us here, and we're all over the board, which I absolutely love and makes the conversation more fun. But what do you really do if you have a field that you know is going to be high in nitrates? You tested it, it came back hot, sent the samples off to the lab, you know it's high in nitrates. What are some options that you have, immediate lifeboat style options for the time and the place with a hot field loaded with nitrates? I know some of the techniques that I've used in the past is energy supplementing or considering an ensiling practice. What have we got on that?
So are we talking standing forage or are we talking things that are in a bale, Parker, or both?
You know, I want to say both. Let's take them both at one at a time. So let's start with standing forages.
I openly admit if it is high in nitrates and it's standing forage, yeah, you can use some of those mitigation practices that you just said or not turning those animals out on an empty stomach. But their one management strategy is just waiting for it to mature some out. That would be my first management strategy if it's standing forage in that respect, because I guess maybe I'm not a huge risk taker. But again, if you allow that plant to mature, and Taylor mentioned it earlier, that nitrate level can change. So.
Definitely. I would always recommend if you have hot nitrates or high nitrates in a field, avoid it if possible. That's our first and best option. And then give it about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And if conditions improve, test again. And that'll give you your litmus for whether or not you can turn them out. Conditions don't improve, you're just accumulating more forage and you can break out the baler.
Another thing that's important to kind of keep in mind is, of course, there's thresholds for everything, but it's also important to recognize that different livestock classes have different risk tolerances, right? So maybe our bred cows, of course, we're going to err on the side of caution there. We really don't want to take any risk again when they're going for $6,000, but things like calves or yearlings might be able to handle some of those higher nitrate feeds, just depending on what they test or what that test comes back.
Yeah, that's a great point, Tim. So we have lower risk animals, especially things like yearlings, for example, that maybe we don't have the grafts for them this year. We're trying to maintain the cow herd, but we laid in some yearlings early on. It's already June right now. Maybe you don't want to send them back to town right away, still waiting on a little bit of rain. So if you did have some higher nitrate stored forages, such as the hay, we can blend that with some lower nitrate feedstuffs, definitely some silages. Parker mentioned earlier the energy balance with that. So you have to be able to use that nitrogen and carbohydrates effectively. So working with the nutritionist on these feedstuffs would be important.
All right, Taylor, I got a direct question for you. So, we were talking about energy supplementation and trying to keep those rumen microbes happy. I know that it's commonplace if you have high nitrate feeds that it's acceptable to use dry distiller's grain or a couple pounds of corn per head per day to try to kickstart those rumen microbes in metabolizing nitrates more effectively. Do you have anything to add on how that works or when that would be an option for somebody?
I'm not sure exactly what like ratio you're thinking to put into that. It just kind of depends. Like obviously if we're feeding straight forage for our maintenance ration, for example, like you're saying, the carbohydrate might be a little bit low in that. And so, good rule of thumb, 2 pounds of corn is plenty for cows. Growing calves, you want enough energy in order for them to, have maintenance energy met for whatever growth rate you're targeting. So, I mean, you're not going to be pushing them overly hard on the concentrate side of it, because we still want to have at least 50% roughage in that ration. But that's just kind of a rule of thumb to start out with. Concentrates act very differently in the rumen, and so if we wanted to get into the conversation of limit feeding mature cows, that's going to be a completely different ration than something for early weaned calves, yearlings that are coming into the lot at a younger and lighter weight than we would normally see them. So I usually just recommend, working with your nutritionist. Most of them will come and sample these things for free for you. If we do send the sample in for you, we give you an electronic copy of that. You can forward it, email it straight to your nutritionist. They will type that into your program, and keep it top of mind when they're making that, because we don't want them to be additive, right? So if we have high nitrate, oats and high nitrate wheat hay, we're probably going to have to find something to balance that. But whether it's corn stalks, straw, other kinds of forages, we have good corn silage here. Okay, so we can definitely make some pretty good rations with it. And like we already talked about, probably going to go to calves and yearlings before bred cows, primarily.
Makes perfect sense to me. So we talked a little bit about standing forages. We've talked a lot about hay. We've talked way too much, it almost seems, about nitrates at this point, but hey, it's the topic of the day. So the last one that I have on my list of feed sources that concentrate nitrates or can be used as a mitigation tool is silage. So kind of an open-ended question. When is silage or ensiling a likely option to try to mitigate some of these issues? Is there ever a time that it's going to make more sense versus less sense? How do we feel about that?
If you don't have time to, wait for that plant to mature and let those nitrates possibly dissipate, that might be a case where you want to chop it, take it off the field right away, and then figure out how to deal with the nitrate level. And then after the fact, I could see that in, possibly some rye fields. They're already off, may or may not have tested high. I don't know it exactly, but just started seeing people chop wheat fields in central South Dakota. So those options are there to get something off of that, get it all off of the field, try to get another crop following behind it, to A, either start utilizing that nitrogen in the soil that maybe is left over from your fertilizer history, kick off a second crop. Obviously, it has to rain for that to grow, but I always say it doesn't grow in the bag either. So, usually we gotta feed our cattle somehow. And so, whether that's with a second annual forage, maybe a cover crop mix, even that we are gonna be looking at grazing in late summer. We always have our summer slump of August heat, with our normal pastures. Whether they are cool or warm season, we usually see a little bit of a dip in there. So, if you had an opportunity, at a cost-effective rate to put one of those cover crop mixes, maybe it's just a two forage blend, something simple that cattle might be able to graze in the middle of August. We're gonna have to catch a little bit of rain, but some of those warm season forages are drought tolerant as well. So could be something to pivot to, if there's fence and water available. If there's not fence and water available, those are other things you want to consider on the graze side. So kind of depends if you're looking at it in from a farmer's perspective or a cattleman's perspective in terms of what you want to do with your next crop.
So when we think about ensiling too, as we all know, you have to have the moisture level, and if you go too far and don't have the moisture, you can't ensile. So, and understanding that ensiling is a way to help reduce nitrates, but it depending on how well, you allow it that fermentation to occur, and if you have that moisture for it to happen. So, nitrates can decrease by about 40 to 60% from nitrates from through the ensiling process. But again, if you don't have the proper ensiling happening, that's not going to occur. And also in some neck of the woods, we might grow some corn, but we don't have anybody to cut silage. And so we have guys that are grazing corn stalks, droughted out corn stalks. And again, making sure no different than our small grains, we don't want to graze too far down and leaving part of that stalk, the lower part of that stalk. I actually, it's been several years ago, but ironically, there was a family that had some cows starting to abort and actually die, and they were grazing corn stalks, and they were ripping the corn stalks out of the ground. So, meaning they were getting further down that plant, obviously. So those animals are pretty mighty. So, we can't manage everything that they do. So, those are just some, again, some considerations when you're thinking about, the grazing side of things. And I really appreciate it when Kim said the strip grazing. If you are, for instance, grazing drought stressed corn stalks, not allowing that whole space for them and then that time to come off of those corn stalks. And, in my neck of the woods, there's a lot of interspersed grass. spread throughout the fields. We are not field after field after field. And so we have the blessing of being able to let those cows get off those fields naturally, kind of, and just allow them to go off and graze into some grassy areas, whether that's straws or, some creek areas or whatever that might be, or just a full pasture. So, very, very important that we consider that option too.
Yeah, and the other side of the coin, Robin, I'm glad you brought up stock raising, is that for me on the east side of the state, compared to Robin being in the northwestern corner up there, we are primarily field to field, and it's largely a corn, bean, sometimes small grain rotation. So having pasture land interspersed throughout that matrix, not always immediately available. So we get a lot of people who pretty intensively graze their corn stalks around here, and it just highlights the importance of good grazing management, whether it be standing corn stalks that got droughted out for some reason, or aftermath grazing after the combines come through. You're going to have an accumulation of leftover residual grain, stalk, husk, leaf, and cob all interspersed out there. And we're going to see the most concentration in the stalk of that plant, especially right down at the surface of the soil. So we want to make sure that if we do have cattle out there grazing, we're preventing them from going down and eating the stalk or eating the cob portion, which is a little bit easier than what you might think because cattle are preferential grazers. They're going to target that grain first, and then they're going to hit the leaf, and then they're going to hit the husk before finally going down to the cob and the stalk. So just making sure that you're monitoring what's out there and preventing them from going too far and grazing beyond that leaf, beyond that husk, beyond the grain, and getting into the stalk portion is going to be tantamount to success.
And I make one more comment too that can add on to the nitrate level. So Taylor said, that compounding effect. If you're feeding something a little bit higher in oat or higher nitrates in oats, and then you add maybe some wheat to it that was also a little bit higher in nitrates, whatever that forage might be. Okay. And then we also have to think about the water if we would have higher nitrate water. And so those are all compounding effects. And so those are things to consider also.
All right, so we've talked a lot about all of the issues that nitrates cause and what to look for and what to be aware of and what to do if you do have nitrates. But let's talk a little bit more about the testing program that South Dakota State Extension has been running for a while and has just gotten a little bit of a facelift through Kim Ricardo and myself. So, Kim, you want to tell us a little bit about the nitrate testing program through South Dakota State?
Yeah, so as Parker mentioned, we're kind of revamping our nitrate quick test program, if that's what you want to refer to it as. So we're going to start using some nitrate test strips, which provide a little bit more of a qualitative answer compared to the historic quick test program we've used that utilizes chemical solution. Test program is really beneficial to producers in getting a rapid screening of whether that forage is hot or not, and then once we, get that quick test or that strip test result back, we can then send that forage off to a lab to get a more diagnostic response for you and kind of help make some of those management decisions so you know exactly, what the nutritive content of that forage is and how to best use it on your operation.
Yeah, like Kim was saying, if you bring us samples, as we discussed earlier in the podcast, talking about the best practices for pulling standing forage samples versus pulling a hay sample versus pulling a silage sample. We'll talk a little bit more about pulling hay and silage samples in a minute. I feel like we covered the standing forage pretty well, but you pull those samples and then you provide them to us, bring them to any one of the regional centers or a number of the county offices. We will link a list of all of the drop-off locations and contact information for folks that you can talk to about getting those tests run. But you'll bring the tests in, or the samples into us, excuse me. We will dry them off. We'll do the quick test, which is realistically just a strip test where we dry it down, create a solution, and then dip a piece of paper, almost like a pH strip, into it. And it'll give us a semi-quantitative analysis of how much of a problem exists if there is one. So we'll be able to tell, do you have a small amount of nitrates in there? Is it going to be potentially a concern for the future? Should you use that as maybe an option, or excuse me, use that as possibly a reason to consider using a different nutrient management technique in the future? Or is it going to give us a huge issue? You need to remove cows off of that landscape right now or get them off of that feed source right now. We'll be able to tell that immediately and we can call you, email, text you with those results. However, if you do have a hot sample, we highly recommend sending them in to a lab for professional analysis where they will be able to tell you exactly how many nitrates are in there, what the concentration of nitrates are. And we can help walk you through that whole process. But circling back a little bit, since we talked so much about how to pull a standing forage sample where you want representative plants from the soil surface up throughout the entire field, let's talk just briefly on how to pull a hay sample and then how to pull a silage sample and what to expect when you bring those into us.
So I'll talk about the bales. So when we ask you to take samples of bales, we want you to core them. You need to actually use a core. And most of those cores can be ran with a power drill, which is super nice instead of a hand crank. But you need to actually core the samples. And if you think about a round bale, we want all layers of that bale. So when you core it, you go from the outside in, right? And so that's what we, and a lot of our regional centers have cores that you can borrow, even some of the regional extension centers, some of your feed dealers, they have cores there that you can borrow. So that's one of the key tools you have to have is a core. And then the next thing you need to do is then obviously you need to sample those bales, and you sample about approximately 10% of your bales. So if you have them in a lot by field, for instance, then you should actually always test each field. It's not just you have a hay yard full of hay bales and you're just going to do 10% of them, but knowing, this is from this field over here in this field, so on and so forth. That will give you a better indication of your feed. But you do about 10% of them. So, if you have 100 bales, that's 10 to 15% of those bales need to be cored. Again, you just don't get to core one bale. And then when I'm in a hay yard, what I literally do is as I go down the hay yard and I core, all the way up and down that hay yard on both sides of those stacks. And sometimes I don't get to the top, and that's okay, but I am definitely going up and down, and get a good representative sample. And if you're out in the field and the hay bales are still out in the field, they haven't been stacked yet. Same thing, kind of like when we are doing grazing or sampling standing forage, I go down that field and just start sampling, kind of went willy-nilly all the way down the field until I get my samples that I need. And so again, it's getting a good sampling, and that's approximately 10% of a field, for instance, or a hay yard, if you have all of, in your hay yard.
Yeah, it's pretty similar for on the silage side of things. So again, making sure you're taking a representative sample of that bunker or bag silage, the more the better. And then with silage specifically, it's also really important that we're able to keep that sample cool, potentially freeze it if you're not going to be able to get that sample to a test, within 24, 48 hours, because that wet silage can cause those nitrate levels to drop, essentially. So those are some important things to think about in terms of silage. Does anyone have anything else to add to
You
that?
know, Kim, that might be, I'm glad you brought that up. That might be the most important part of all of this is you need to dry the forage out quickly if possible. So if you take, it's most concerning with standing forages that have the most moisture in them as opposed to silage or especially hay in a bale. But if you pull a sample that's wet, either freezing it if it's silage or drying it out if it's fresh is the best way to preserve the nitrate so that we get an accurate representation of what's in there. And we have a whole on our website, I can link it in. We have a whole list of best practices to be able to dry it out. What I recommend people to do is just cowboy dry it. So if you pull your samples, put them in a paper bag, and then stick them in the windshield of a nice hot truck and let them sit there for a little while, because that's effectively the same thing that our commercial dryers are going to be doing back here in the lab. We just want that moisture out as quick as possible without damaging the plant. So not too hot, don't stick in the oven and cook it at 450 like you're making dinner. But also don't just let it sit and rot, because we're gonna have no idea what the actual nitrate concentration is, because we're gonna lose a lot in that process. All right, so wrapping things up a little bit here as we're getting towards the end of our time. Honestly, I think that the story of this podcast and the story of the day is going to be test, test, test. If you have any shadow of a doubt that you may have nitrate concerns, please bring in a test to one of the locations located on our website or any one of the eight regional centers for South Dakota State Extension. We will make sure that we get you a free rapid test done. And then if that nitrate test comes back positive or too hot, then we can talk about getting it sent off to a lab. With any luck, we'll be able to get most of those sent in at very low cost to the producer. Feel free to give us a call and talk about it if you have any questions there. I thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. This has been the Grazing Toolbox, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ. brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.